Petersfield's Shine Radio.
Shine Radio's Growing Together is sponsored by DeMello & Company. Financial advice for you, your family and your future.
Welcome to Growing Together, the gardening podcast from Petersfield Shine Radio. Well, it can only be described as a wet and miserable day. Typical May bank holiday weekend. And I'm up at the Adhurst Estate Allotments, joined by my dear friend and long-suffering neighbour, Coxie. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. How are we?
Wet.
Yes, it's soaking, isn't it?
Well, we stood under my shelter, well, the chairman's lodge, as we affectionately call it. And you can probably hear the rain tip-tapping above us. But
you say about tip-tapping. I'm underneath that hole.
Yeah, I know.
With the rain just pouring through.
A little maintenance needs doing on the chairman's lodge, let's be honest. Come and stand in the shelter, Coxie.
Oh,
come on, come and stand here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we've got Luna, who's looking awfully sad as well. But there's lots going on still, though, isn't there? We've had a busy few days up here, haven't we?
We have, a very busy few days. You're into your architecture again?
Yes, finally, after 2 years of threatening, on Friday, before the bank holiday, a big lorry turned up with, well, a few hundred pounds worth of timber for me. And needless to say, it was rather heavy, and I had to carry it all, a plank at a time, well, two planks at a time, actually, all the way down to the plot. And it's at that time I'm thinking, why did I have a plot so far away from the gate? But I'm on it. Maybe it's not for the rest of the day, because the rain looks now set in, doesn't it?
It does. It does look very set in, but still, I can be pleased because I've got some runner beans in for the first time this year.
Well, you've had a bean weekend, haven't you? You've got, what have you planted so far this weekend?
French beans, broad beans, various types of runner beans. The one I've tended to go for as far as runner beans is concerned is Benchmaster.
Oh, yeah. You've heard of Benchmaster? Yeah. Benchmaster's good, reliable. I think it's a spin-off from the bean that's called Enorma, which is what all the show growers use. So Benchmaster, it could be a goodie, Coxie. Could be a goodie.
Remind me, what's the size I need to...
24 inches, isn't it?
24 inches.
2 foot.
2 foot.
A 2 foot beam.
2 foot beam.
I think you'd be lucky with a Benchmaster, but hey, we'll see. Hang some weights off the bottom, mate.
So, yeah, and the broad beans, I've put some marigolds around the broad beans to try and attract the aphids away from the broad beans themselves.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you know what happens down here, we just get them covered.
Yeah, absolutely. And marigolds are a great companion planting plant, aren't they? They're a real strong smell. And yeah, as you quite rightly say, they should keep a lot of the bugs away.
And the other thing I've been putting in the ground is some pak choi.
Oh, okay. So, I know a lovely recipe for pak choi with some oyster sauce, Coxie. It's very good.
Yeah, I think we might give that a go.
Yeah, then. It's really good. Yeah. Spent a little bit of time up in the wilds of Milton Keynes a few years ago. And there was a fantastic Chinese restaurant in the village I was staying at. And they did pak choi and oyster sauce. Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. Delicious.
So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm looking forward to my dinner invite already. So, what else have you been up to then? Because it's been a busy weekend, hasn't it?
It has been a busy weekend. I was fortunate enough on Saturday, as you know,
yep,
to head off to the Gardeners World Spring Fair at Bewley.
How was it?
Oh, it was fantastic. A wonderful day, a truly wonderful, typical English day in terms of the sun was out.
Yep.
It was warm, fantastic setting in terms of Bewley. Always a wonderful place to go and visit.
It's beautiful down there, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. The marquees were set out to give you enough space to walk between them.
Yep.
The atmosphere was wonderful because you're with people all ages who are there to enjoy themselves, relax, at the same time as have a keen interest in gardening like ourselves.
It's great to be surrounded by like-minded people, isn't it? And I think the horticultural world is full of people who are just happy to talk about what they do and what they're passionate about, aren't they?
Very educational.
Yeah.
Not only talking to the storekeepers in terms of what they had to sell, but also in terms of other people wandering around who'd sort of taken interest in what you were looking at and saying, oh, have you grown those before? How do they do?
Yeah.
What are the colours that come out? That sort of thing.
Well, as well as a bit of a jolly, you were also there in a bit of an official capacity for the podcast, weren't you?
I was.
Yes, your first outing.
It was indeed my first outing. I was let loose.
Shall we hear how you got on?
Yeah, what a good idea.
Fantastic. So this is Coxie speaking to...
Emma. So this is Coxie with Anne, with a lovely young lady who's very kindly put all the various items we've been purchasing during the course of the day, far too many for two of us to carry, in a wheelbarrow, as you can hear in the background.
Yeah.
And Emma is going to tell us all about what she's been involved in over the past few days as far as the Spring Fair is concerned. Emma.
Hello. So yes, I'm Emma from Maggie's Southampton. So I'm the centre fundraising organiser. But do bear with me because it is only my fifth day in the role. But I was here all day yesterday at Bewley, and here half of today. It's been really lovely so far. So we had a garden, one of the beautiful borders, and that was by Laura and Andrew, and we actually won best beautiful border, and it was platinum, which we're very pleased with. So there's two stands from Maggie's today and yesterday. So we've got the plant creche, which has done incredibly well, and the wheelbarrowing service, as you can hear.
Which we couldn't do without, listeners. Yeah. I can do, without this wheelbarrow, we would be sunk.
Yeah. And then we've got more of an information stand next to our beautiful border. We're selling a bit of merchandise and just trying to spread the word about Maggie's.
Tell us what Maggie's is.
So it's a cancer support charity, and we've got nearly 30 centres around the UK. I think we've got three internationally. But we're planning on doubling those numbers in the next 5 odd years, so hopefully have 60 centres. So it's a cancer support centre for anyone affected by cancer, not just patients, but friends and family, and it's at any stage in your cancer journey. We're very welcoming, we're a walk-in centre. We have cancer support specialists, we have counsellors, benefits advisors, and then myself and Will Ham. We're the fundraising team. It's an absolutely lovely place. It's at different hospital sites, but they're not clinical at all. It doesn't feel like you're at a hospital. It's like you're at someone's home. It's absolutely lovely. Definitely worth the visit. Anyone can pop in, have a cup of tea, have a chat. They're a really lovely place to be.
Thank you, Emma, for that. And Emma, I'm sure you've got a website.
Yes.
Or a means of people being able to find out more information about you.
Yeah, absolutely. If you just Google Maggie's centres, I think it's maggies.org, you'll see all our different centres. Or if you're local to Southampton, just Google Maggie's Southampton. All the information is online.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Emma. We really can't thank you enough for all your help, especially with ferrying all these lovely plants, which will head down to our allotment. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Growing together.
Coxie and Emma, thank you for that. Sounds like you're having a great day. And obviously Anne was there with you, and she was catching up with some people as well. Let's hear how Anne got on.
We're at the Gardeners World Spring Festival in Bewley, and I'm with Sue Kent and Ellen Mary and Coxie, and we're just having a little catch-up after a really interesting conversation and talk we've had from Sue on winning the war against weeds in the allotment, which for our podcast is obviously something fascinating. So lovely to meet you, Sue. First of all, thanks for the talk. The fun thing I found that both of you guys were talking about was edible weeds, which was something that I wasn't aware of. So obviously our listeners didn't hear that. So first of all, which is your favourite edible weed? And I think I know which yours isn't.
So my favourite one is nettles. I mean, I literally pick all the tops off, say the top five leaves. I juice them. I use them as spinach. Juicing with cucumber and apple and mint, they're absolutely amazing. I cook them as spinach. So you don't have to grow many greens in the spring, because you know wild garlic and nettles are all there, and they have such a refreshing taste. You know, nettle soup, you know, nettle in curry, using it like instead of spinach. Brilliant.
Fantastic. And what about yourself?
I'm going to say the one that Sue doesn't like. I'm really sorry, Sue, but it's dandelion. It's a taste. You have to get used to the taste. But the flowers make a really nice herbal tea if you add something sweet with it as well, because it can be a little bitter. And the foliage can also be eaten as well, like in salads. But you do need to blanch it first,
right?
Because otherwise it's very bitter. And the root can be eaten. You can make it into you could even grind it and make it into like a coffee. It doesn't taste like coffee. It does taste like dandelion root. But again, you can sweeten it a little. It's just full of antioxidants and lots of vitamin C, and it's super good for you. So if you can get over the taste, it's a good one. But I'm also with Sue on nettles. I think nettles are really great too.
And actually, the dandelions really divided the audience today, didn't it? Because I think most people were quite surprised to hear about that. Coxie, have you ever eaten a dandelion before?
No, I don't think it would ever have crossed my mind to go anywhere near eating one of those.
And are you going to?
No, probably not. But there was a weed you mentioned during the very interesting discussion, where you said you could use it on cuts. Now, I'm sure our listeners would be very interested to know what weed was that and how would you actually apply it?
So that's the red dead nettle, which you will get at this time of year and a little bit earlier as well. It's kind of very soft to touch, but it's fairly low growing, and it's got kind of pinkish, reddish, purpley tips and flowers, which you'll find bees will absolutely love. Excellent. But you can actually eat all of it. So you can pop it into soups or salads or smoothies. It's full of vitamins and minerals. But they used to use it to pack injuries a long time ago, obviously. We don't do that anymore. But you can take the leaf. So if you've just got a little cut, like I have on my thumb, and you could just rub it onto the leaf, and you've got all that anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, that kind of thing will stop it getting infected. Just rub it on. That's wow. it.
Natural Savlon.
Natural Savlon.
Fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating.
And what about yourself, Sue? Have you got a useful weed that our listeners might want to embrace?
Some people think oxeye daisies are weeds, but I think they're the most beautiful flower, and I've actually introducing them more and more into my garden because they don't root too deeply. They're quite easy if you decide you don't like them. But I think, to be fair, I do chickweed is quite good, and also you can eat that. And also I do actually have a dandelion tea made from the flowers, but I use mint as well, and so the mint disguises it, so I have eaten it. But I tend to see if something is, I'm always looking to see if I could eat docks because they're so prolific, but I haven't really found the seeds of the docks you can eat. So if you can let your docks go to seed, the seed are quite nutritious, so you can use those, like a topping, as you would a flaxseed or something like that. They always grow in the wrong place, so I never get them. Let them seed, because once, of course, you let them seed, you're going to get so many more. So it's that, do I really need that seed that much against that downside of the dock leaf completely invading my vegetable patch?
And obviously, Coxie and I do the podcast a lot from the allotment. What is your best ever tip for an allotment person, for you especially? I mean, I'm quite a newbie, but Mark Coxie's done it for
years, aren't I? I've been around a few years.
Yeah. So what would anything that you've learned by accident, or what's your favourite thing that
I think that the most important thing is when you've sown bean seeds and things like that, is to cover them in a wire protect. I use things like old freezer cages to put over the top of them, because the pigeons, the moment your back is turned, the pigeons just pull everything out, and you've gone to sowing the seeds, or you put your little onions in, and they just do it for a laugh.
I know.
Some of them they want to eat, because they love new shoots. They love new shoots. And some of the things they're not going to eat. They're just going to pull, blackbirds just pull out your onions. So I think bird protection at the initial stage is quite a good thing.
Yeah, because I've only had the allotment since October, so I'm still full of joy, and now I'm starting to get fear because I'm realising everything's out to get me.
You won't even see a pigeon. You won't even see a pigeon, and you'll be down the bottom. You'll be shutting the gate, and then they'll go straight down onto your crops.
In fact, I saw on your Instagram just this week that something had been eaten by mice, and we were having a lot of mice conversations this week, weren't we?
We have a pet mice in our polytunnel. It comes in every morning. You go in the trap, and I share my polytunnel. One of my allotmenteers would have killed it, but I share it with a lovely gentle lady, and they take it down to the bottom of the field and let it out again. And the next morning, the same mice is back. And I say, oh, for goodness sake, you've got to take it miles away. And so mice will just dig up, you sow your peas, they'll be in there, you'll see the little trample marks. Mark the voles are another one. So again, if you want to avoid that, you start them on the windowsill, and then, or inside where you have, but my friend's got mice inside. So you start them inside, and once they're up a certain size, then things won't tend to eat them.
Well, my sweet corn was dug up by my dog inside yesterday, so I seem to be being hit from all angles.
Fated is what they call
it. I'm fated, yeah. I've only got six sweet corn, they're going down.
You can re-sow quite a lot of stuff until, isn't it the longest day? It's midsummer. You can keep re-sowing. If you fail, keep re-sowing, but midsummer's your cut-off point.
So we've got hope yet.
Yeah.
I also heard you mention that your allotment was clay, which also ours is, and I was listening with great interest on your dig, no dig, etc. We're finding that our clay is getting extremely hard if we don't dig it. Any tips for clay?
I have a lot of mulch. I've used a lot of wood chip and cardboard. board, and the bits at the, it's the paths I did, and the paths are really good now because they've had all these layers and layers of stuff. So I treat your bed initially like a path and just layer cardboard and layer, or swap your paths and your beds around every so often, and then your path will be quite nice if you've done that method, if you've done the cardboard and the wood chip. Wood chip takes about a year to rot down. Then swap and use what you had as a pathway as a bed. But I think you've got to dig the thing to break the soil up, so you've got to dig that top layer in, and then it'll break up, help break. I mean, Monty digs. You've got to dig it in to break up the soil. You've got to get it in there so it can sort of balance out the clay, the proportion of the clay to the mulch or whatever it is. That's what I found.
So we're going to win.
I'm an amateur gardener, not a professional gardener, not growing for like the world to eat. I'm just going for me, but that's what I found. You know, you just set solid otherwise, and then you get cracks when it dries. And but if you've got clay, when it's dry, you've got to mulch it. Otherwise, it just dries and cracks. Wouldn't you find? Yeah,
it's a new thing. And you're really into your well-being and stuff. And another thought I had was, any of your weeds are particularly good for well-being around, you know, what you've looked at as well?
Well, the way I look at it is most plants have a place. All plants have a place, but most have a place even on your allotment. So therefore, I think if you think about the fact that everything works together in one way or another, that immediately promotes better well-being. So you said just then that you're starting to be fearful of like what's going on the allotment. If you start to like think of it like it's not a failure, everything's an experiment. Some things some year will grow rampantly and others won't another year. It's just how you garden, like every year is a little bit different. So I always think with weeds, just go with the flow a little bit. Do you know what I mean? And there's a lovely practice you can do is when you are weeding, if you're having like some negative thoughts or feeling some kind of anxiety, pull the weed, just for a moment think about that negative thought, and then chuck the weed and chuck the negative thought out with it as well. So actually the act of weeding can be good for your well-being, and actually it's really satisfying to weed, isn't it?
It is satisfying. You get this lovely clear bit.
Yeah,
but also the weeds are telling you about the soil health underneath. So when you've got nettles, you think, good soil.
Look for that positive.
Exactly that. And I think that's the key of gardening, isn't
it? That's rich soil, so I'll plant that there. That's a poorer soil, so I'll plant that there.
Brilliant. Okay, lovely. Well, thank you so much, guys, for all your tips. We're very grateful for your time. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes, lovely to meet you.
Well, thanks, Anne. Thanks, Coxie, for your first roving report for the podcast. Brilliant. Well done. So it's typical, isn't it? You know, bank holiday weekend, absolutely chucking it down with rain. Obviously, Saturday, I couldn't go to the BBC Gardeners World Spring Fair at Bewley because I was doing the plant sale with Harriet.
How did that go?
Oh, honestly, Coxie, overwhelmed. The generosity of the people from Petersfield and beyond was amazing. We raised a considerable amount of money for Harriet's trip to Africa. I put a note on Facebook yesterday just thanking the good people of Petersfield for their generosity and kindness. We were pretty much sold out. We got there at about 9:15, and as we were unloading the van, it was like locusts, people buying stuff off us as we were setting up. It was brilliant. We couldn't have asked for anything better.
What sort of things were most popular?
Well, do you know what? Next year, I'm going to grow twice as many cucumber plants. I could have sold the cucumber plants I had 10 times over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the mini munch ones as well. Luckily, I remembered to save some, unlike the beans, which I sold all of them, so I have no beans. So I need to sow some more beans. You're planting yours and I'm only about to sow mine.
So what you're trying to say to me, Mr. Chairman, is that having paid for some broad beans up front...
This is awkward. Yeah, Coxie, thank you so much for your donation. Unfortunately, I sold out and don't have anything left for you.
Ah, there we go again.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I'll plant some more for you. They might be a bit late.
A bit late. But what is it they say about sowing? Isn't there something about when you get to the shortest day, you're okay with sowing most things, and then after the shortest
day? Oh, I don't know.
I think I heard that from someone.
Shortest day or longest day?
I've got it wrong, haven't I?
Yeah.
It's the wrong time of year.
Yeah. We're rapidly approaching the longest day, Coxie.
The longest day in June.
If we have to wait till the shortest day in December, we're a bit stuffed, mate.
Yeah, especially my broad beans.
Your broad beans will be well over by then. But one of the things you say, that's a really interesting phrase, because shallots are meant to be planted on the shortest day and picked on the longest day. I cheat that system a little bit and plant mine a bit early.
Tell me, in terms of your shallots, how are they coming on?
They're looking all right, actually. I thinned them out the other day, so they're now 4 little onions per plant now, so they've got room to grow. No fear of them sort of getting misshapen. So 4 cells, if you like, for want of a better phrase, and they'll now hopefully start swelling up. They'll be good for the show bench this year.
Excellent.
Hope so, anyway.
Well, you normally do very well with these shallots.
Yeah, we do all right. We do all right. Yeah, the spuds are up. You can see the green poking out the top of the black bags there, which is great. And I've got this pile of timber that still needs dealing with.
You have indeed. There's a lot of woodwork there.
And it's getting wetter and wetter as we go, isn't it?
Just looking at the sweet peas,
yes,
Mr. Chairman, in terms of, I know you planted them, must have been a few days ago,
yeah,
if not weeks. And it looks as if they're just waiting for that warmth before actually starting to sprout, because otherwise they're looking a little bit low on the ground.
Low, they're looking a bit pathetic, to be fair, Coxie. But I always find they do this. You get them out of their pots, you plant them in the ground. No matter how much you warm the soil with the black covering and what have you, I think they sit there. They're looking okay. They're nice and green. But they're just, as you quite rightly say, just waiting for that warmth. Mm. And they'll just go and they'll be away. I mean, our other neighbour, Tonya, there, she's had hers in cold frames for weeks and weeks. And they've even started flowering, some of them, haven't they?
They have.
But she's planted hers and they're well ahead of mine. But she plants hers really early.
Sort of October, isn't it?
Yeah, October, November time. Where I didn't plant mine till January, February. What about you? When did you plant yours?
So mine weren't planted until February, and as you recall, I had a little episode with those four-legged things.
Yes, we won't use Anne's animal recognition. They were definitely mice that ate your seeds, weren't they? Not deer.
Not deer.
Or slugs.
Not in the greenhouse, no, anyway.
Well, you don't know, wouldn't you? Oh, you imagine the mess a deer would make in your greenhouse.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my days. Well, there's lots to do, Coxie. And, you know, this weather just is not helping us, unfortunately. And what have you got planned for the rest of the day?
I think it's a case of getting dry, quite honestly, and then probably trying to get warm.
Yeah. Earlier on in the week, I actually caught up with Bev, who's been helping us out at the allotments with our composting. So I had a really good chat with a really interesting lady talking about all things compost. So I'm joined at the allotments by our newly refurbished allotment beds with Bev Exel, who's helped us with this. Good morning, Bev.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
It's just started to rain typically, hasn't it?
Well, that's okay, that's usual.
April showers, but we've had a lot of rain, haven't we?
Yeah, January, February, March, April showers. Yeah.
I think it's been a bit more than showers as well, hasn't it, really?
Yes, intense flooding in lots of places.
It's been horrendous, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot.
But it's amazing, the last week or so we've had quite strong winds and fairly warm weather, actually. It's dried out amazingly, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's certainly dried out the bins here that we cleared.
Yes. Yeah, so you've done a lot of work up here with us. And I know Sue from the community garden got in contact with you, and you very kindly come up and helped us consulting, I suppose, with our compost bins. What's your background, Bev?
I've been in horticulture for many years, over 30 years, on and off in the beginning, but then I did a complete career change. I think composting's pretty much my favourite topic, but I also like renovation, pruning, and basically dealing with what you have in the garden or on the allotments, rather than sort of going out to buy stuff and thinking that you've got to take stuff to the tip, because really everything can be recycled in the garden.
Recycled or upcycled in some way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm passionate about stuff not travelling around on the road.
Okay.
Because there's no need, and it also ensures better biosecurity. I think a lot of the reason why we've got diseases popping up here, there and everywhere is stuff's travelling and it doesn't need to. We need to keep it localised within our gardens.
You'll have to excuse the background noise. I've got my beloved allotment hound with me, Luna. She's found some good sniffs in amongst the compost. So we set up some communal compost bins here, right in the middle of COVID, actually, when we opened up the new fields.
Yeah.
It was perfect timing for the perfect storm of bad composting, I think. Because people were taking topsoil off, bringing it up here, putting thistles, weeds, nettles, everything into these bins, and they soon became completely unmanageable.
Yes.
So you've come in. Talk to us about what you've done here.
Well, first of all, when I first arrived, there was just an enormous pile of what I assumed to be compost, with weeds growing on the top layer, obviously. The brief was to basically make it into a functioning compost heap. But when we first got started, it became clear that most of the pile was actually soil, not compost. And there's lots of problems with that. Firstly, it's never going to disappear.
No.
because compost rots down, but soil doesn't. Secondly, I understood that a lot of allotment holders didn't have much topsoil, because I think this was a turf
area. Yeah, that's right. Before. So the top field where we stood now looking over, which we call the second field or the top field, was rented from the Adhurst estate by the turf company over on the Hambarn roundabout.
Yeah.
When they stopped doing turf, Obviously, the story goes that they gave up the lease and we took it over. So a lot of the nutrients were definitely stripped out of this field, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, most ground will have a good layer of topsoil on the top, and then the rest is subsoil. And different species live in subsoil compared to topsoil. So to take away your topsoil, and I can see why people have done it, they've obviously cleared grass or weeds, and rather than weeding them through or covering them over to die off, they've just dug them up, and the ground's quite heavy here.
It is, yeah.
And quite wet.
We've got a lot of clay.
Yeah. And so everything is sort of all stuck around the roots, and I think mainly they don't know what to do with it, but they just want to get rid of it.
Yes.
And get started on the stuff underneath. And so this pile just grew and grew and grew.
Well, you say it grew and grew and grew. In a weekend,
well,
it grew. Because I think we had quite an unprecedented sort of thing happening, because during lockdown, the demand for allotments went through the roof, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I can, completely.
And we must have had about 40 or 50 people, literally overnight, apply for allotments, and we didn't have any spare allotments. So we opened up the 20 new plots down near the community garden there. And it was a real endeavour, because obviously we still had to socially distance, but we had the work to do.
Yeah.
And we got a guy come in, had an industrial rotavator on the back of a small tractor. So he rotavated it all over the top, but there was still a lot of thistle and nettle and stuff like that in there. But people, as you say, were really keen to get started and get stuck in. So just took all that material.
Yeah.
And 20 people, you know, over a weekend that were enthusiastic at the time, filled that area very quickly.
And that's, I mean, I can understand how that happened. They probably didn't know anything about the difference between soil and compost. They probably thought it would rot down. You had a pile on the go, so that was indicative of this is where you can dump your waste. So I can understand how it happened, but I think what I'd like to do here, or what I've endeavoured to do through talking and notices and stuff, is to educate people a bit more about the difference between soil and compost.
Yes.
You need your soil, otherwise what are your plants going to grow in? There are other ways of dealing with overgrown ground, weeds or grass, but mainly you need to hang on to your soil, and there's no point sort of piling it up somewhere else, because it's not going to go away.
No.
Compost will rot down, it will drop, you know, considerably in a pile, but soil never will. So sadly, the situation we ended up with here is a massive pile that wasn't getting any smaller. Nobody quite knew what to do with it, and that's not composting. Sue wanted me to create some workable compost, which is what we've done. We've sifted out any green stuff that was left on the top of this soil pile and chopped that up and added it to various other ingredients that were here, and left instructions for people as to what they can put on the compost heap, and that will be good stuff for the soil going forward. But in the meantime, the big pile of soil just had to be redistributed. We sifted it, which made it look nicer, and so people have taken it from the new pile we created. I think they've understood that they need more soil. There is soil here. But it involves work, because obviously there's all sorts in amongst that. There's roots that we don't want, some roots that we don't want.
There was a lot of perennial weeds in there.
There was a lot of plastic, there was a lot of metal, all sorts of things like that, which they've got to go somewhere, I suppose, but not on the compost heap.
No.
And a compost heap, you know, is an invaluable wildlife habitat. So plastics in there we really don't want.
No, absolutely. So what would you say for an absolute novice? And I have to say, as many years of gardening experience I've got, I am pretty much a heathen when it comes to composting, Bev. What would you say is the best sort of building blocks to get a compost heap started?
I think in most people's gardens, there would be space for a compost heap. Often people feel that they haven't got space, but you can start small. When you've started small, you'll quickly realise that you want more bins, but hey, let's just do it one stage at a time. Just a small 1 metre squared bin, which we make out of pallets.
I can say pallets are the perfect building material for them, aren't they?
They are.
And they're a waste product, aren't they? You go down to the industrial estate in Petersfield, you know, Rafferty's, for example, down there, crying out for you to get rid of their pallets for them.
Well, I've got plenty of uses for pallets, but composting is certainly
we'll talk about those in a minute.
Some of them have got quite wide spaces in between, and we do need to contain the material and try and get some heat building in the compost heap. So if you happen to pick up some pallets that are a bit gappy, then it's certainly a good idea to add some more planks, just to, it doesn't need to be completely solid, but it does need to hold the contents and sort of maintain the heat inside.
Okay.
Site them in a shady spot. People often put them in the sun thinking that they need heat. They do need heat, but internal heat, not external heat. If you site them in the sun, the contents will just be too dry. They need a lot of moisture. And shade really helps with that. I should point out, we're talking about cold composting, which is the best scenario for allotments and gardens. But there is another process, hot composting, which is sort of similar to the Dalek-style bins that people have, the plastic bins.
Oh, yeah. If you look out over here, you can see quite a few of them, can't you? Literally, there are.
I mean, they're sort of tidy and people like them, but it's important to understand the difference. So hot composting is created with a sort of restriction of moisture, oxygen and light. So it's sort of like a dark box, really. And things will heat up quicker and rot down quicker.
Okay.
The problem with having a Dalek bin in your garden or on an allotment is you're continually putting new stuff in the top. And so although you've got some rotted down compost at the bottom, you can't really get to it.
Ah, right, okay. So is it best to sort of, if you're going to use one of these hot compost bins then, to save a pile maybe of compost in an area,
yeah,
and then fill it up?
Yes.
And then just leave it?
Yeah, so
okay.
The process of hot composting compared to cold is it's a quicker process. So cold composting is also a wildlife habitat and hot composting is not. If you've got open heaps like we are building here, it will be a wildlife habitat. You can add to it as and when the garden waste is available, mm-hmm. because obviously there's stuff throughout the year, all
different
sorts of stuff
different through, stuff. Yeah.
And you're adding and adding and adding until the bin is full, and then you leave it and move on to another bin. That's why you'll always need at least two, but okay. ideally three. You could do the same thing in a Dalek bin. Other ways of hot composting, there are special containers.
I've seen these tumbling containers.
Exactly, the tumble. But the point about hot composting, and the same applies with the Dalek, is traditionally you add all the material at once.
Yes.
And that's what creates a hotter reaction, a quicker reaction between the ingredients. So if you had, for instance, three Dalek bins and you stored your garden material in separate piles, just waiting for that moment when you're going to make your cake, if you like.
Okay.
If you've got space to, you know, keep your grass cuttings in one pile, your herbaceous green stuff in another, and your chipped up woody stuff in another. And then whenever the day arrives that you're going to do it, you build it in layers and put the lid on.
Let's just focus on hot composting for a moment,
okay.
if we may. So you've got your three piles of your sort of woody stuff, your herbaceous stuff, and your grass clippings.
Yeah.
How do you make your cake?
Literally layers.
Okay.
There is no sort of set guideline as to how deep your layers should be, but the purpose is to have a mix of ingredients because it's the reaction between the mix. Green stuff is the nitrogen in a pile.
Yep.
That applies to cold or hot composting. Mm-hmm. The brown stuff is the carbon, and grass clippings, obviously it is also green stuff, but it's a really good activator for a
compost. Of the moisture in it.
Yeah, because of the moisture and something that I don't understand, but it's a good activator, as is coffee grounds and urine.
Nice.
Well, here's a good use for it. And you always need to go when you're on the allotment, don't
you? This is true, actually. Go and pee in your Dalek.
Everyone should pee on their compost bins. I mean that. I seriously mean that. Obviously, it's a lot easier.
We might start a trend.
And good, because your compost is likely to need an activator unless you're really clever at getting your layers right. But basically, just put in a layer of, start with grass, layer of grass, then some woody, then some green herbaceous, and over and over again.
Till it's full.
Yeah, and the purpose of layers really is it does take away the need to mix.
Yes.
Because people will often say, oh, I have to turn my compost heap. No, you don't. Not
if you layer it properly.
Yeah, if you've got a mix, you don't need to to turn it. Having said that, the reason why I always operate with three bins is you fill up one, you start on the next one, so you've got one full, you've got one that you're using, and then a time will come when that second one is full and you'll want to turn the first one
into
that you've
the third
left
one.
Into the third one. So it's one turn, that's all.
Okay. And this is back to dry composting then?
That's cold composting.
Cold composting, yeah.
Yeah, it's
okay. So three bins.
Three bins.
If we're cold
really.
Composting, three bins.
Yeah, and probably I would if it was Daleks as well. As I say, the main reason being, if you've just got one, you'll keep adding to the top. You're never actually going to get to the good stuff at the bottom.
Okay, so compare the two then for me, hot composting and cold composting. Mm. So you've filled your Dalek up,
yep.
you've saved all your stuff, you've filled your Dalek up, How long till it's usable compost, roughly, rule of thumb?
I would say probably a year for Dalek bins.
Okay, and how long for this sort of the cold method?
More like 18 months. So.
Oh, not much difference then?
No, there isn't much difference, and I 100% much prefer cold composting.
Because of the wildlife?
Because
element.
Of the wildlife, because it's got moisture in it, because you can add as and when stuff is ready in the garden. So I used to have Dalek bins. I would leave it and take... I would just lift the whole thing off,
yes,
because really that's the only way to get to the bottom. And 9 times out of 10, there would be a rat's nest in there. Because it's nice and warm and dry.
Yes.
And often people will tell me about their compost heaps, their cold composting heaps. They'll say, oh, you know, I've got grass snakes living in there. That's a red flag. Grass snakes and rats like dry, warm, stable conditions. That's not the right conditions.
Right, so it's not doing its thing then, exactly, in the compost bin. Okay, because exactly, it should be too hot.
It should be too hot and it should be too moist. Moist is the main thing. If you're doing cold composting but your bin is out in the full sun,
yes,
it will dry out too quickly, certainly in the summer.
Can you cover them? Not like a Dalek cover them, but can you sort of, is it appropriate to shade them? Sort of put some, I don't know, some of that sort of Mirapur covering, I'm going to say the horrible word plastic, over the top. But is it worth doing that sort of
thing?
Well,
a lot of people do cover with plastic carpet or something like that.
I was going
to
say carpet was, yeah, a traditional...
It was, yeah, but that was... So I can speak from my experience and from what I've read about it. I would avoid covering the heap. It does need moisture. It needs the rain to get in,
yes,
there. Yes, if it's hot and dry, even though you've sized it in the shade, the top layer will not break down like the rest of it. So okay, it'll look like nothing's happening. But just scrape away literally a few centimetres and all what you want to be happening is going on.
Right, okay.
So whenever I start the next compost bin, I just take the top few, literally 2 inches maybe, yeah, off the top of the old bin that's still sort of mummified where it's dried out.
Put that at the bottom.
Put that at the bottom.
Gotcha.
So I would not cover your heap. It won't get enough moisture. It will be home to grass snakes and possibly rats. I mean, unless you want that. But I don't want that.
No. And grass snakes, not so bad.
Well, I mean, yes, it's also wildlife, but if it's living in your compost heap, that's not an efficient compost heap.
No, okay.
So
okay,
if your compost heap is too wet and slimy, they won't like that either, but that means it's anaerobic, it's not breaking down properly.
Okay.
It actually will become smelly, and that smell is nitrous oxide.
Good. Shouldn't smell.
Shouldn't smell or smell sweet. And then,
like silage does. So love it or hate it smell,
well,
that, isn't it?
Silage is also anaerobic.
Yes.
So, yes, you've got that smell, but, I mean, that's, I believe, very nice if you're a cow. I don't know.
Oh, I love the smell of silage.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah, I do, yeah. It's not everyone's cup of tea.
No, but the sweet smell that good aerobic compost gives you actually releases oxytocin in the brain, so it makes you feel good. So that's why
that
all
right?
of us gardeners are really
That's why we're always happy.
Happy,
fantastic,
yeah.
I love it. I love it. Give us your top sort of 3 tips about setting up and maintaining a compost bin then, Bev.
Well, firstly, have one. Because
have one, yeah.
I did a talk just a few days ago and out of the big audience, 2 people were composting.
Really?
I just can't believe that's the case anymore.
The talk you're giving, it's to gardeners.
It's, yeah, yeah, it's meant to be. And there was quite a lot about composting in there. Didn't realise till afterwards that I was talking to 2 people, basically.
Wow, okay.
So, I mean, part of the work that I do, if people need it or want it, is to install compost bins,
yeah,
for them. And I can even manage them. Because some people will think they haven't got the time or the space or the energy or whatever.
Because it is a lot more involved than just putting stuff in a pile, isn't it?
I don't think it is, but maybe that's because
some people might think it is, though. You know, yeah. What we're talking about now is quite a lot of maintenance.
The only maintenance I've spoken about so far is turning it once.
To that end, I suppose there's not a lot of maintenance.
No, there really isn't. As long as you've got the right mix going. But often I'm called into compost heaps, as I was here. The fact that this one turned out to be soil is,
yes,
by the by. I'm called into compost heaps because people have had one, they've added all this stuff, it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
And one look will tell me instantly, you know, what's going on. Usually stuff is too big, it hasn't been chopped down, or it's not in layers, or it's been covered over and it's too dry. It doesn't take me long to renovate. So really, it's about sharing the knowledge of how to do it, and it's not rocket science. It's literally just creating a good mix is the key point, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So get your bin, make it out of pallets. That's a really good recycling. Add your stuff. I mean, if you've just cut the lawn and your lawn is massive and you've got loads and loads of grass, don't put it all on the pile straight away, because again, it will become anaerobic. It will sit in a pile,
yeah,
and it will
sludgy
be
and
Well, yeah, it'll either be sludgy if it's wet grass, or it'll be dry as a bone and grey and musty. And I mean, it will be hot, but it's actually going to mummify rather than break down.
Okay.
But grass is a good activator. So, yeah, just add a layer and store the rest until you've next put.
So one thing I read about some time ago, I actually wrote about it in the Petersfield Post, was about composting with grass clippings, because I did a bit of research about it, and people were putting, you know, they'd done a weed and feed on their lawn and put those clippings then into the compost, and the compost had died effectively.
Okay. Well, I haven't heard about it dying, but I know it's not a great idea to put stuff on if you've done a really chemical application to your lawn. I mean, I don't use chemicals.
No.
And I have to keep reminding myself that
other people do. Yeah.
If you want to improve your lawn, you don't need to add any of that stuff. Just get a mulching mower, which, yes, it doesn't collect the grass, but if you cut fairly regularly, the grass is quite small and it will just break down.
That's where those robot mowers come into their own, isn't it?
Well, I don't think they mulch, do they?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, they do mulch.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They go out and they're almost like a sheep.
Nibbling.
They just nibble. Just nibble, nibble, nibble.
Yeah.
Do a bit of nibbling, go back to the home, recharge, go out again.
Yeah.
Fascinating watching them.
Yeah, but that will feed your feed your grass roots, and you know that because that's breaking down back in on the soil.
Yeah,
that will feed your grass roots. Or get a sheep. I think a sheep is better because then you've got some manure as well.
The trouble is, the sheep will eat everything, won't they?
Well,
having been brought up on a sheep farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they escape, it's trouble.
Yeah.
And my dad did everything in his power to keep his veg plot, which was in the middle of the field, under lock and key from those damn sheep. I tell you, the goats were worse, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're a bit big. Chickens can be a really good addition to the garden. Grass and borders, they will eat your pests, they will poop and they will scratch.
Yeah.
So on the lawn, that's really good sort of constant scarifying going on. So yeah, use a mulching mower or do no-mow May through to August.
Mm.
Yeah, there's plenty of other ways to make your lawn green again. But I think the talks that I do are about sustainable gardening, and it's not really sustainable anymore to hold on to that idea of a big square of beautiful green grass. It's not going to stay green during our hot summers now. It's just too hot.
No.
Often there's water shortages, you know, every year. If you are watering your lawn, you really need to think, is that a good idea? It's not worth it, but it's not, you know, water is a precious resource.
Mm.
Your garden needs to sort of maintain itself, especially going forward. So mulching mowers will look after your lawn. Think about losing some of your lawn.
Mm.
Grow veg. That's a much
better
idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I'm all for that.
And plant pollinators, more native wildflowers.
Increase the size of your borders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So weeds, they have got a place in your borders, but if you really can't bear them there, they can go on the compost heap. What you need to be sure of is if it's perennial weeds, such as ground elder, nettles, docks, all of the top of that weed can go in, all the green stuff.
Okay.
As long as it hasn't gone to seed, certainly don't put any seeded ground elder in there.
There was a famous quote, wasn't there, from Pippa Greenwood on Gardener's Question Time years ago. Somebody phoned in and said, I've got ground elder, what do I do? And she said, move.
Oh, but there is a trick with ground elder, and that's if you've got ground elder in your borders, you might as well give up. And so I always advise people to grass over. So
oh, really?
if you've got a border over there and it's full of ground elder, grass it over and start a new border elsewhere, because mowing kills ground elder. For the reason that I'm talking about putting it on the compost bin as well. If you keep taking the top off,
yes,
it weakens the roots and it won't survive.
Okay.
So turning it back to grass will deal with ground elder, but we're looking at a pile right now, aren't we? With a lot of nettles
and docks on the top. You can see that, yeah.
So,
and potatoes as well.
Well, who doesn't love a free potato plant?
Well, exactly.
I mean, I definitely
exactly.
love that. So with that, I would get my shears out, chop all the top off.
As long as it's not gone to seed.
Yeah, and put it in the compost bin. And then
again, nettle, though, is really high in nitrogen, isn't it?
Yeah. And then the roots, either lay them in the sun to dry out until they're properly dead. I'm talking a long time, not 2 days, like a few months. Or put them in a bucket of water to rot down.
Okay.
But definitely don't put the roots on your compost heap. Same with annual weeds. Weed them before they've gone to seed. If you put a seeded annual on your compost heap, you are going to spread weed seeds around.
Yeah, you're asking for trouble, aren't you?
So again, either weed before they've gone to seed or use your shears again. Instead of weeding them out of your borders, just cut the tops off with your shears and leave them.
Okay.
They might reshoot a couple of times, but then they'll lose
they'll get the idea. And, okay.
And that's all stuff to rot down in your border.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
And then one other thing we've got on this pile is old stems of brassicas.
Yes, they're tough as old boots, aren't they?
They're tough, but if you've got a sledgehammer...
Oh, yeah.
Only a small one, a hand
just
one.
Just a little lump hammer. Yeah, yeah.
You just need to bash them so it kind of breaks
them apart.
So it
breaks the fibres up?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that's a good idea for lots of material that you might put on the compost, because the more you bash it open, the more surface area there is for all the microorganisms to get to work on that.
And next to the pile we've got here, we've actually got a pile of, well, it looks like brambles and bits and bobs, all chopped up.
Yeah.
What's the reason for that then? Is that the same sort of thing about the surface area?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And we did bring a chipper in to do this because there was a huge pile.
Yes.
But you can just do it. Whenever I'm pruning, I will chop up what I've pruned, roses, brambles, whatever. So you can put all of brambles in, just take the roots out.
Yeah.
And just chop them into sort of 6 inches, whatever.
Okay.
And that will help to really get the compost heap mixed up. It breaks it up.
Yeah.
You need air in a compost heap, and the woody stuff creates the air pockets.
Gotcha. Gives it that gap in between the more...
So that makes it more aerobic and more places for wildlife to hang out.
Those are the top three tips. So chop stuff up. Chop your woody stuff up small.
Yeah.
Perennial weeds are fine to go on as long as you don't put the roots on there and nothing to seed.
Yeah.
And then the third tip was about sort of brassica stems.
Yeah.
Bash them up with a hammer.
Yeah. And
brilliant.
That's good fun.
Well, Bev, it's absolutely fascinating talking to you. You mentioned earlier on about multiple uses for pallets. Now, I love a bit of upcycling, and my ethos about allotmenting is trying to do things for as frugally as you can.
Yeah.
So give us a tip on pallet upcycling.
Okay, well, I...
Other than compost bins.
I have to confess, they're not necessarily my ideas, but I spot them and I take them.
Yeah.
So, for instance, lots of people have a big van, depending on their work, so mm-hmm. for garden tools or tools of any description. So a pallet that's got the double thickness is perfect to stand all your tools up in.
Okay.
So you can do that in your van, in your shed, in your kitchen even.
Yeah, just looking here, there's a great one there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So certainly good for storing tools. I've seen some fantastic planters made out of pallets, even as much as... So that's just one pallet.
Mm.
If you drill that to the wall and put a retainer underneath each of those fat sections,
yes,
you can fill that with soil and plant it. So I've seen those painted up.
Oh, so it's a plant in between the gaps.
Yeah.
So. Okay, yeah, yeah. Obviously, we're doing this on a podcast, so we can't see it. But
no.
Yes, I see what you mean.
So just put a retainer underneath there, fill it with soil.
Gotcha.
And have some... So I've seen some
strawberries.
Beautiful ones.
Strawberries would be great in that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
But again, though, it would dry out really quickly. You've got to think about the watering, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, that possibly is a place where you could use up some compost sacks. Because... You know, that will help to keep some moisture
line it.
In. Line
yes.
it.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
you'd need a couple of holes to make sure it ran through.
But, yes.
So you could have a green wall against your shed.
Using pallets.
You could put pallets on a pitched roof on your shed or a bin store or anything you've got out in the garden. You could create a green roof using a pallet. The pallet would hold the compost.
Hold the compost.
I'm sure
Brilliant.
There's loads more.
Oh, that's fascinating. Ideas. Bev, it's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time. If people want to get in touch with you about their compost bin or anything that we've spoken about, how do they do that?
Well, they can email me on bev@gardensrevitalised.co.uk or check out my website, which has got a get in touch form on it. So you have to type in www.gardensrevitalised.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bev, thanks so much for your time. Genuinely love chatting to you and can't wait for you to catch up again. Coxie, dry and hot composting, which is your preference?
I just try and make sure that what goes into the bins,
yeah, because you're a big fan of the hot composting with the Daleks,
yes.
aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got a few dotted around your plot.
A few? I think I can see about 10.
Well, it's good stuff, you know, and I think the more we can compost, and certainly after speaking to Bev, I'm going to have a much more concerted effort with my composting. Coxie, obviously there's not much we can do today, but what's your plan for the rest of the day?
So for the rest of the day, Steve, my plan is very simple. As soon as I get home, get into some dry clothes, I'll be out in the postage stamp of a garden.
Yes.
Putting in some flowers, I hope.
Oh, lovely. Well, I'm hoping, I'm looking at my weather radar app on my phone. I reckon we've got about another hour of this rain. So I'm going to start cutting some timber in the rain in the vain hope that I get it all stitched up and done by close of play tomorrow at the latest.
Well, the very best of luck with that.
Thank you, mate. Good to catch up with you. Speak soon.
Likewise. Bye for now.
Thanks for joining us on Growing Together, the gardening podcast from Petersfield Shine Radio. We'd love to hear from you. And if you want to get in touch, please do so at shineradio.uk. Happy gardening.
Growing Together is new twice a month and supported by DeMello and Company. Financial advice for you, your family and your future. Get the latest editions of Growing Together at any time at shineradio.uk. This is Shine Radio, made in Petersfield by
Gareth,
Claire,
Geoff,
Beth
and you.
To join us, email team at shineradio.uk or call or WhatsApp us on 01730 555 500.
Join our team and make it shine at the radio station made by you.
You make it shine, Shine Radio.